for a new Ford, make it Bill Curry, Tampa Bay's first family of Ford for over 60 years. At Bill Curry, our prices are better than good. They're the best, and they're right up front with our $5,000 best price guarantee. That's right, Bill Curry will meet or beat any Ford dealer's best offer or give you $5,000 cash. Shop our huge selection of new Fords, then get the lowest price, the best price, or we'll give you $5,000 cash. Only at Bill Curry Ford, located on Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the world-renowned Ira Kaufman Podcast, featuring none other than the king of Pasco County, the custodian of Canton, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the wonderful, the iconic Uncle Ira, Ira Kaufman. Ira, how you doing today, pal?
I am in a very festive mood, festive. Mr. DeKemper.
You know, the holiday season.
I just bought Fred Goodall lunch, used to be my competitor from the Associated Press. Bought him a bowl of chili.
And now you're leaving, so you don't have remnants.
Had the Greek salad with the chicken over it at Mom's place. Great place, by the way. It's pretty close to Bill Curry Ford, where you should also get your buns down. After you have a bowl of chili at Mom's, you go up the road about another quarter of a mile on the other side of Dale Mabry, and you got Bill Curry Ford. All 2019 vehicles must go at Bill Curry Ford. All of them, Lee. He has slashed prices to incredible lows to clear out room for more 2020 inventory. Now is the time to get shopping at BillCurryFord.com. Right now. Remember, their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles is in full force. And don't forget, Lee, your trade-in will be a full year older when the calendar turns to January 1st. General Manager Sean Sullivan, you know him well,
is waiting for you.
Not only is he waiting, this is for people who aren't even in the market for a truck or a car. You know what? He's such a Bucks fan. He's so personable. Such a good guy. If someone is around this neck of the woods in Tampa, whether it be internet, your wife has to go to International Plaza, your girlfriend. You don't want to go shopping, but you don't want to drink because it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Stop in at Bill Curry Ford. Say hi to Sean Sullivan. And that son of a gun will talk to you he will kill an hour with you talking Bucks.
He'll break down the 2020 draft. He's the perfect example of Buck Nation because I would say after the Giants game, I saw him a few days later. Absolutely destroyed. I may not go to any more games. He's got a suite over there. And I've never seen him so down. And now he's got to be having the time of his life because, look, we're sitting here at One Buck Place. A lot of people are talking about this football team. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are talking about number three.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Everybody's weighing in. Everybody and their mother.
A lot of Bucks fans, this winning streak is bittersweet. They're like, oh, my gosh, they may be turning the corner. There may be hope. But it's destroying the draft, the draft order. Is that?
Yeah, you pay a little bit of a price, but I think it's probably worth it, Lee. Now, I haven't done enough research, but they have a chance to go 7-1 in the second half of this season after starting 2-6. I'm not sure any Buck team's ever done that, gone 7-1 in the second half.
Is that right?
I sent my Hall of Fame ballot in today.
I know two of those.
Today. The first, and this is the cut down from 25 to 15.
And 15 gets you in the room, right?
15 gets you in the room. The ballots are due back in about a week. I mailed mine in today. The first three X boxes were John Lynch, Rondé Barber, and Simeon Rice. And I got to tell you, this is not an overwhelming class. I don't think it is. I mean, you know, you got some returning guys like Edgerrin James. And
Lynch is going to have a tough one.
He's going to have again. But I want Rondé in that room. I want to be able to make that speech for Rondé. I talked to him today. He's pretty encouraged about the way the Bucks are playing, and Lee, how can you not be?
Mm-hmm.
They're playing good football. That was a wildly entertaining game Sunday.
It was roller coaster. That's Jameis stuff. You notice Rondé has a nasty little habit. He's a good broadcaster. Have you seen the nasty habit he's developed?
I think he might have dropped an F bomb or something.
Yeah, he's got a habit of doing that.
Well, you know, you live in Tampa, and that's what's going to happen to you. I asked him about his golf game because he's a serious golfer. Not good. You know, they used to have an Outback tournament at the TPC. Brooks used to be in it. A lot of celebrities would come out. Joe Theismann would come out all the time. Mr. Peterman on Seinfeld, that guy who's a good actor named John.
The guy with the
O'Reilly.
Voice like this, the great
Elaine,
hair.
Yeah, Elaine.
Okay, yeah.
He used to play.
He would talk real flowery about things.
And Rondé used to play, and He's, you know, he takes his golf seriously. I take my golf seriously, but it's not helping me, Lee. Not helping me. And on a personal note.
It's seriously bad, is that what you're saying?
Lee, and I know how your listeners love these personal things. I've had a little bit of an injury, a lingering injury. Hasn't gotten any better.
What?
Hasn't gotten any better. Well.
Hamstring?
I thought it was a groin pull.
I'm not going there.
Year and a half. Hasn't gotten worse and hasn't gotten better. I think it happened in a tennis court. I felt a twinge. And the main symptom is if I lift up my left leg to put my pants on or socks or whatever or get in the car, I feel a pain on the upper thigh, the inside of the upper thigh. I thought it was a pulled groin. You know, what do I know? But I figure a year and a half, my wife says, you got to get it checked out. I go to one of these sports guys.
There's a Don Rickles joke there.
Get it. One of the sports guys on Monday flexes my knee, my left side. He goes, you're stiff as a board, Kaufman. I said, I'm not 32 years old. Of course I'm stiff. He goes, hey, your right side's a little better than your left. I go, that's what I've been telling you. sends me right in for an x-ray. Okay. Come back. Now he comes back in the room. I say to him, all right, I assume you're going to send me for an MRI now. You know, where should I go for an MRI? He says, not necessary. I didn't like the way he said it.
Uh-oh.
He goes, it's all there on the x-ray. Now he pulls the x-ray out of the thing, and he shows me, like, the left hip area, you know. He goes, you're a mess down there, over there. I go, what is it? He goes, you have a torn hip flexor.
A labrum.
A torn hip labrum. I said, labrum? A labrum is a baseball injury on your shoulder with pitchers. He's got a torn labrum. I said, he goes, the hip also has a labrum. It's a protective thing that goes over the hip socket. Mine's shredded like shredded wheat.
You've been bouncing around?
Bouncing around. It doesn't bother me when I run. He says, it does not regenerate. It's not going to regenerate. It's not going to get better. So I said, all right, what are my options? He goes, well, I can give you a anti-inflammatory.
Oh,
I think it's called Celebrex or whatever. We could do an injection into your hip with a steroid. I came home. I started thinking about it. You know, I said, I've lived with it for 18 months. It's not a big deal. It doesn't bother me when I stand, sit. You know, it only bothers me if I got to lift up my left leg in a certain position. I can run on it. And so I've decided.
That's weird. I'm
not doing anything about it. And if it gets worse, we'll revisit it. I can't have steroids in my body because it might affect my podcast, the Kemper. And I don't want to go. I don't want to go off script on this podcast.
It won't help.
And listen. No, our numbers are good. I'm very happy with our numbers. I'm coming after Dr. Phil. Look out, Dr. Phil. Oh, man. And the Bucks are starting to win, so I think our numbers are even going up, Lee.
Oh, yeah, really because more people are interested. This issue you have, it's not going to deteriorate?
He said I could probably get another 5 years before I need a hip replacement. So, you know.
Really?
So I'm not in a hurry for a hip replacement.
You've been dealing with this like no big deal.
Hey, you know, at my age, things break down, Lee. As long as the things that count don't break down, I'm a happy man.
Well,
and we're not going to get into it.
But you're a tough customer. That reminds me, I worship this guy. I'll say right here on this podcast, Whitey Herzog, I never thought he should have been in the Hall
of Fame. You're always quoting Whitey Herzog.
Yeah, I love the guy. Well, he's very quotable.
Don't tell me he had a torn hip labrum. Well,
I mentioned this one time to Mike Schmidt, and Schmidt almost fell over. He laughed so hard. Whitey Herzog, you know you're getting old when what's supposed to be limp is stiff and what's supposed to be stiff is limp.
That ain't bad. That ain't bad, Lee. Now, I'm not at that stage and we're not going any further with this discussion. Back to Jameis Winston. Now, Lee, anybody that's driving, I don't want them to pull off the road for what I'm about to say. But you know this is coming because I've been hinting about this for a couple weeks. Lee, I'm looking you right in the eye. I'm coming around.
Drum roll. Brr.
I'm coming around. I'm warming up to Winston. I'm warming up. Here's what I'm going to say right now. One, he's coming back. Let's not even talk about mystery.
You think so?
I think so. He's coming back. Too many factors in the other way. You know, 67-year-old coach want to start with a rookie quarterback. Who's out there in free agency? These guys aren't better than Winston. Here's my number one thing, Lee, and you've heard me. Two things I used to get on him. You're not winning enough.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's changing things around right now. They got a real chance to go 9-7.
Their defense is playing better.
Defense is playing better. Although not last week particularly well. Not last week.
Enough.
Made a stop at the end.
Yes.
But two, and I think this is even more important for me, here's been the difference. One, he stayed clean since the Uber incident. So in terms of off-field incidents,
right.
I'm not too
about
worried
that.
About it.
I forgot.
Yeah, because when it came to light, it happened 2 years before.
That's a good point.
Lee, they score a lot of points. I don't see Matt Gay on the field unless he's kicking extra points. That's a good thing. Buck kickers used to be on the field too much. And I'm not knocking Matt Gay because he's had a good rookie season. Like, I see how I make you laugh.
But it's so true. The Kickers, you saw too much of them.
You saw too much
and
of them.
And as bad as they were, you shouldn't have seen them at all.
The red zone offense is very good. It's very good. No, they're getting seven instead of three.
Yeah, you keep making that point, and I got to be honest. I haven't looked it up. But you were saying the red zone is very good.
Really very, very good. Well, yeah, I think they're number three scoring team in the league. You can't overlook that. And that's with the interceptions. That's with the five pick sixes. On top of all that, they're averaging 30 points a game. I mean, you can't ignore that.
Well, it's about
with no running game. I mean, you just
can't.
Yeah,
the running game isn't there. I guess it was about 2 months ago, and you almost had me convinced Jameis in the picks, you can't deal with it. And I accidentally, literally by accident, I was looking up some stats. I wasn't looking for this I'm going to bring up. So I stumbled across this when I was trying it, when I was looking for something else. And I saw at the time the Bucs led the NFL in points scored. Like, whoa, wait a minute. You're going to get rid of the quarterback for a team?
You're not talking about yards. You're talking about points.
Points, yeah.
It's all about points.
Yeah, and I'm like, wait a minute. You're going to get rid of a quarterback that leads the league in points?
Now, Lee, what did you think of my question? You were there when I asked it. Of course, last week I asked the Arians question.
Yeah, yeah.
And today, you know, everybody's asking about his thumb, and he's not going to say anything definitive. We'll see what
he did not says. Have a soft cast on today. I don't know if that was on purpose, but when we were in the locker room, he didn't have it on either.
I'll say this unequivocally, Lee, and I don't think you'll disagree one second with it. If this decision is left to Jameis Winston, and we don't know if it will be,
mm-hmm.
if it's left to Jameis Winston, he's playing Sunday.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
He's not going to sit this game out if it's his call.
Well,
you know that, and I know that.
At the very least, he's going to give it a try.
He's going to give it a try.
Yeah. They may pull him. They're like, no, you can't.
He's not going to say, I can't play something.
Exactly. Exactly. That's not in his DNA.
Here was my question today. Jameis, you are now the subject of all kinds of national speculation. Everybody's weighing in, whether it's writers from NFL.com, Brett Favre, mm-hmm. Polian, everybody's
Tarkenton.
Tarkenton. Everybody's got an opinion on Jameis.
And by the way, who
Winston.
Did Tarkenton talk to?
Me.
Yeah, that's right.
The same.
No one else.
No one else. So.
And he called you.
Yeah, but he was pushing Jim Marshall. But, by the way.
He
didn't mind talking about Jameis Winston. You know what? It was not a bad answer from Winston. He looked at me and he says, I just enjoy coming in on Victory Mondays. Now, it doesn't address the question.
Yeah,
it doesn't address. You know that he's well aware of everything that's going on around him. Like, he's got to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he's not reading it, his camp is reading it and informing him. But. You know, God bless him. His focus is on the Detroit Lions right now. I can't knock that.
I chuckled at your question only because that's sort of like asking Tom Brady what's it like to be the number one player in the NFL. Because
it's a big picture question, you know.
Well, Jameis is used to this because going all the way back to Florida State and the accusations, and then he was on a national championship team, and then he was the number one draft pick. And then there was the Uber stuff. So this is like old news for Jameis.
But, Leah, the only different dynamic is they got to make a decision about him. That's the difference. I don't know. This franchise thing and the four-year deal. And, boy, they got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Jason Light and the Glazer family and Arians have a lot of...
But don't think for a minute, Lee, that Winston's going to agree to a three-year deal for $36 million. That's not going to happen. Why would Winston do that?
Isn't that what Pat Kerwin's basically saying?
That's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Because that's fantasy land.
Then his agent's doing him a disservice
at
that point.
Would it be better, as financially better, for the Bucs to franchise Shaq Barrett and then deal with Jameis?
Could be.
Yeah, because the franchise tag for Shaq Barrett, based on 2019 standards, is like $17 million, or Jameis is like $27
million. I don't think the Bucs are going to be in as much cap hell as people think they're going to be in 2020, even with all these. First of all, the cap goes up every year, and it just went up again.
Yes.
They got some expiring contracts. Not anybody that's making $18 million, but some expiring contracts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, you got some tough decisions on Sue and JPP and stuff, but... The core decisions, I think, and you think, I think, are Winston and Shaq Barrett. What are you going to do about these guys?
Well,
you can't franchise both, Lee.
Exactly. That's why I'm starting to think it might be financially smarter to franchise Shaq Barrett. Because I love Shaq Barrett. But to be bluntly honest, we don't know if this is a fluke or not.
And the franchise number on Barrett will be less than the franchise number on Winston.
Very much so. Like $10 million less. That $10 million you save... That gives you some space to negotiate with Jameis, with Sue, with JPP.
Now you're going to have Godwin down the line. You know,
around the corner, yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be some stuff.
And who knows? And I don't think this is rash to say this. Who's to say that Godwin's agent might have him sit out? Say, hey, wait a minute. This guy is one of the best receivers in the NFL. He's a hell of a lot more valuable than your $700,000 you're paying him. I don't know that.
But he's on the contract.
He's on the contract, but that doesn't mean he can't sit out. You know, his agent, like, Chris, you're not going to participate.
You mean like a Le'Veon Bell maneuver?
Sort of. I mean, not that drastic, but saying, hey, you know, this guy's worth a whole lot more than $700,000. We're going to sit him out unless he gets a pay raise.
I'll tell you one thing. Everybody in this building knows how good Chris Godwin is, and he's a hell of a player. He had a great first half Sunday. And he's going to be under a lot of scrutiny now with Evans out.
You took words out of the mouth. There's no question he's going to be double teamed the rest of the way. No doubt about it. And
you asked that, yeah.
Pardon me.
And Winston agreed with you.
Well, not just that. Yes, he did. But I also asked Matt Patricia, some inside baseball here. I guess they delayed Patricia's teleconference by an hour. And so that happened to coincide with the window when practice availability is available for Bucks Media. So a Bucks media relations person came up to me. She goes, do you want to talk to Matt Patricia? I said, well, not really. I don't have anything to ask him, really. And she said, well, he's going to be available in 3 minutes. And there was no one there.
Yeah.
And that would have looked bad. So I, okay, I'll help you out. And so I was coming up with questions. And I literally was the only guy there till the very last second Eddie Encina came in. But I asked Matt Patricia, I said, hey, Mike Evans is out. Do you think it's a one-man band now? You shut Godwin down, and you've got the receiving
corps. Coaches don't normally like to say that.
No, they don't. But he said something that was interesting. He really believes the Bucs are going to be reliant on the tight ends for a change, which they really haven't been
before. And Howard's coming on a little bit.
Yes, and Braid as well. And to me, that's just common sense. You've got these talented tight ends, and if you're smart about it, Howard could be a slot receiver. And I've been saying that for months, that Howard could be a slot receiver. Why don't they do that? So, and I've written this already on JoeBucksFan.com. Now, Byron Leftwich is going to be tested. All right, you don't have Evans anymore. For the first time since you've come to Tampa Bay, you don't have
the natural focal point of every defense that plays the ball.
And that's gone. So now you're going to have the scheme open Chris Godwin. You're going to have the scheme open Perriman. Maybe Watson. I hope not Scotty Miller, but we know how infatuated Arians is.
But
with
in
Scotty
the last
Miller.
2 weeks, Jameis has done a nice job of spreading the ball around.
Yes, he has. And I don't know if that's scheme. I don't know if that's Jameis. I don't know.
By the way, if Leftwich is scripting the first 15, 20 plays, a la trying to be, you know, the next Bill Walsh or whatever. Well, there's only one Bill Walsh. And, you know, I think I'm suggesting that it's not working. First pass of the games are being intercepted. It's like you're telegraphing what you're going to do. And you know, Jameis, you said it before. If it's on that page, he's going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think he should have more flexibility and take more responsibility of, hey, I don't think this play is going to work or whatever when he gets to the line. But I'm not sure this first 15 scripted plays is working like it should, Lee.
I don't disagree, and I'll give the guy credit. Tom Bassinger, a lot of Bucs fans do not like Bassinger at all.
Well, he's an analytic master.
Yeah. Tom put out this Sunday, three times this year, first play of the game, Jameis has been picked. Four times this year in the first possession, which the first play is the first possession. Guess what the Bucs record is when he's done that?
Well, I'm looking at your face and you got that smile, so I'm going to say 3-1.
Yes. Isn't it odd? 3-1?
That's odd.
Very odd.
That is
so
odd.
So the way I look at it, throw a pick, Jameis. But, and this all ties into what Favre talked about in his interview. For people who don't know, Brett Favre has an hour during the football season only on NFL radio, an hour a week, just like you and Russo.
Who's
you're
he doing
half
it
half.
With? Who's he doing it with?
Bruce Murray.
Okay.
And Bruce Murray basically set up Favre, say, hey, Jameis produces, but he also throws picks. What do you do with the guy? And Favre started talking about his own experiences. And I swear to you, it was word for word what I've heard about Jameis. Word for word. You know, Brett Favre said it used to be with Holmgren would call a play. Damn it, I'm running it. To hell with audibling. The coach knows
what
he's doing.
That's what the coach wants.
That's Jameis. That's what I've been told. A very good source in the Bucs organization told me 2 years ago, when Jameis learns to, like, hey, even though Cutter told you to call this, don't call it because Jameis doesn't think that way. The coach told me to do it. That's what he wants. The coach knows more than I do. I'm going to do it. That's just his mentality. More than
well,
I
then
see.
The coach has to communicate that kind of stuff to Winston, that he's got the freedom to get off that.
Yeah. By the way, Favre said it took him a long time to not think that way.
Did Favre say anything, Lee? Because I didn't hear it like
that. And that's Jameis.
Did Favre say anything about how in his young days he always thought he could make the play?
Yes. And that's Jameis, too. You know, Jameis, Cutter famously talked about it when the Bucs drafted Jameis when they went up to the pro day at Florida State. and they had his private sit down. And Jameis, this is very famous, Jameis told Cutter, "I'm not afraid to make any throw." And Cutter's response was, "You need to be." Favre admitted he was the same way. He said what the Bucs do, and he's convinced the Bucs do this. Okay, Jameis throws picks, and right now he's got a blind spot about linebackers. It's always the linebackers. And at the Bucs,
they're taking their drops.
Yeah, and that the Bucs should be crafting plays like, okay, you have three options, but these plays should be crafted in a way that it helps prevent picks from line. And I'm saying picks from line, but Favre didn't say that. But Favre said, for example, Mike Holmgren would set up a play for him, and it would have three options: a dump off, an intermediate, a long pass. The intermediate and the dump off was built into that play specifically so Brett Favre didn't throw picks. But what would Favre do? I'm gunning it, man. And Favre,
his whole career or his young part of his
career? His young career, young days with Holmgren. And Favre, like Jameis, knew he had a gun, and these are Favre's words, not mine. That was an asset, and it also hurt me. And it hurt him because I'm going to wing it. And you know what? He'd get picked because he trusted his arm too much. And Favre's own words, I quote here, "It took me a long while to learn that." And I don't know if this is Jameis, but it sounds like it. Favre said it took him a long time to learn. You know what? Sometimes not getting a first down is okay. His words, not mine. Digest
you
that.
You have to have faith in your defense. And Winston hasn't had that.
You know, that's what I speculated this on your podcast some time ago, that Jameis knew every time he took the field,
we got to outscore somebody.
I got to score 35 or we're screwed. And maybe with the defense playing better, Jameis is
that
learning.
That filters through everything you think about during that day.
Perhaps.
When you have that.
Yeah, when Jameis
mindset.
Takes the field, when he gets out of the locker room, I got to put up 35 points. And some people have stated, well, who's not going to screw up? You know, if you think you got to score 35, you're doomed before the game starts.
As we sit here, Lee, we sit here, second week of December, Bucks a hot team. Say they pick in the middle of the draft. Now, look, Lee, I do the AP power rankings. Every Tuesday morning, they want my rankings. It's only 12 riders across. Bob Glauber, Shereen Williams, John Sarnecki, you know, some
business. Bob Glauber, you mean Tom Crean, right?
Yeah, Tom, that's right. Tom Crean look-alike. You know, we rank them from 1 to 32. Of course, the Ravens have been on top for about a month now. You know, the Bucs were like 27 for most of the season. 25, 26, 27. I got them at like 15. I mean, I got them a notch ahead of the Colts. I mean, they got the same record. They just beat them. To me, the Colts are mediocre. Perfect example of mediocrity.
As Team Glazer would say, arrow pointing down.
Arrow pointing down. Now, they got some injuries. No, and they lost their quarterback on the brink of the season. Frank Reich's pretty good. And by the way, I'm going on Russo. And I've already harangued him about Mike Tomlin. now, he's at the baseball meetings. I hope you don't ask me about the Gerrit Cole contract, which, by the way, Lee, I don't know if it hits you wrong, but it's bigger than some South American countries. I mean, what's going on in this world? I remember when making $1 million was all that it was about. $325 million? Lee, how are fans going to wrap their arms around that?
I am almost old enough to remember this. But in 1968...
Willie Mays was making $100,000.
Well, in 1968, there's a famous cover on Sports Illustrated. It was a picture of all the Cardinals, and it was the most expensive team in baseball. And they were making chicken feed compared to what these guys are now. And that was a big thing back then.
That was the year they lost to the Tigers in the World Series.
Hell
of a World Series.
And to this day, Tim McCarver, I heard him talk about this on a broadcast. To this day, I guess Bob Burns was an old writer with the defunct Globe Democrat of St. Louis daily paper.
Might have been Bob Brogue.
Bob Brogue was the Post-Dispatch.
Bob Burns was
the Globe Democrat. Okay. He was there forever. My dad always talked about he went to college with his brother. Bob Burns wrote a column where he said the reason why the Cardinals lost that World Series to the Tigers, they were overpaid. And that bothers Tim McCarver to this day.
Wow.
To this day. What, 50 years later? To this day, that bothers McCarver.
Now, Lee, I've already said I'm warming up to Winston. And if that doesn't drive Buck fans off the road, you know, because I was the guy that said if he did what is alleged in the Uber thing, I'm looking for another quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I said that, you know, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So if they're not driving off the road, they're going to drive off the road now.
Oh.
Because I'm going to do it again, DeKemper. You ready? I got to put this the right way.
Oh, it's a cliffhanger. Ira has got something very profound to say, and we're going to get right to it. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Thank you for listening to the Ira Kaufman podcast presented by Bill Curry Ford, home of the nationwide lifetime warranty, BillCurryFord.com. Now, Sunday, Ira, it's the last time that you can hang out and watch a 2019 Buccaneers game with him. His road tour stops at Buffalo Wild Wings in Sarasota, 5235 University Parkway. All the details are at joebucksfan.com. But arrive early, stay late, hang out with Ira Kaufman before, during, and after the game. It's a lot of fun with fellow Bucks fans. Last road game of the season. Get out there to Sarasota Buffalo Wild Wings or just go to buffalowildwings.com and find your nearest location to enjoy a Sunday of NFL football. Now at Pin Chasers, that's the bowling spot, the hot spot to party in the Tampa Bay area. New Year's Eve plans, get to pinchasers.net and you can set them up right there. A lot of fun ahead, but every day's fun at Pin Chasers, where shoes are always free for bowling. And every day there's a great special. Sunday morning, start with the breakfast bowl, unlimited bowling, $9. You get breakfast. And then at night, unlimited cyber bowling kicks off for just $10.99 from 9 o'clock till close. $2 Blue Moons, other drink specials. Great fun at Pin Chasers. Pinchasers.net, three locations. Check it out today. All right, thanks again for your support of the podcast. We never stop. Even when the season ends, this thing rolls year-round. Back to Ira.
Let's keep perspective. Even if they finish the season with a six-game winning streak and finish 9-7, I'm not going to call it a successful season, DeKemper, because
no playoffs.
You got to make the playoffs. I'm sorry. I don't want to lower the bar, Lee. I will not lower the bar that low. And this team, I think, has enough players to make a playoff run, and instead they get eliminated like a little after Thanksgiving. I don't think that's acceptable.
I think that's fair.
So I got to be careful about it because it would generate a lot of momentum towards 2020, but don't call it a successful season.
Well, you know, someone, and I'm going to mention his name, I think he'll embrace this. Tom Bassinger will be the first one to say, what did that momentum do for the Bucs in 2016?
Fair point. Now, there's other factors. You know, they had a different makeup in the locker room. Maybe this team is tighter.
The Redskin pair.
Here came Hard Knocks. Those two Redskins, the knuckleheads, didn't help. You never know from year to year. Mm-hmm. The Niners have an excuse last year because they closed with a rush in 2017. Remember Garoppolo? He's the man. Yeah. But then he got hurt. Week three last year, and they stunk. But they lost their quarterback. Well,
they played okay, but they had a backup quarterback.
They had the second pick in the draft. They had the second pick in the draft. They got Bosa. But, when you lose your quarterback, there's an asterisk.
Which is why Tomlin's doing such a great job.
But in 2017, the Bucs did not lose Jameis Winston.
And by the way, earlier I laughed because you used the verb harangue.
Harangue.
And of all people, Bruce, a harangue.
Wait, do we know anything about the darn Detroit Lions? You talk about an anonymous team. There's about five anonymous teams, and they're one of them.
Yeah, well,
I know they got a receiver named Kenny Golladay. He's pretty good.
They're anonymous enough that there's some real talk that maybe Matt Patricia is not exactly secure.
You know what? They played some pretty good football in September. They started off with a tie.
Yeah.
Your first week is a tie. I mean, that stinks against Arizona, and they're not very good. They played the Chiefs in week four, Lee. I don't know if you remember the game. They lost 34-30. They could have won the game. Might have been a bad officials call. They haven't been the same, Lee.
Well, Stafford got hurt too, right?
Yeah, and they just haven't been the same. Did Patricia say anything about the quarterback for Sunday?
No, and I didn't expect him to, so no one asked.
They got Darius Slay. You know, he's a good corner. Mm-hmm. They don't have star quality, Lee. They really don't have it.
Outside of Stafford, who's not available. You really hit the nail on the head. They're anonymous. You know what? When you're anonymous, the coach is not secure. Because that means you're not doing anything.
Another Belichick disciple struggling.
Boy, oh boy. And to me, that's just...
Vrabel's doing a nice job.
Vrabel's doing an okay job. And Bill O'Brien's doing an okay job.
Okay job.
That just reinforces what a good coach Belichick is. If all his disciples, and Lombardi was the same way, if all his disciples are flaming out, now Vrabel is not, kudos to him. You know, your backup quarterback, talking about backup quarterback, Tannehill's saving those guys. That just tells me what a great job, coach Belichick is and has.
Why is Charlie Weiss weighing in on Jameis Winston? Charlie Weiss?
Well, Charlie
is looking for a job.
Well, Charlie Weiss works for Sirius XM NFL Radio. And, you know, you're not alone in saying, who's Charlie Weiss? Well, you know what? When you're on the radio, if you're not giving opinions, compelling opinions, what the hell are you on the radio for?
I'm not convinced he's watching enough tape of Jameis Winston, Lee. I'm not sure about
I don't
that.
Know. You know, Weiss makes some interesting points. And Weiss is, people could say, who's Charlie Weiss?
He was an offensive coordinator.
Look at what he's done with quarterbacks. He developed He developed. Now people are like, oh, Brady Quinn. Brady Quinn was a first round pick. So he developed him into a first round pick. Who was the backup that he got to a Pro Bowl with the Patriots? I mean,
not Matt Castle.
I want to say Castle.
Or whatever.
Vinny Testaverde
resurrected him.
Yeah. So it's not like Weiss is Marcus Rojo.
I guess I'm questioning whether he's seen enough of Winston. That's all.
And I don't know that.
Didn't Favre say he didn't see that much of
Winston? Well, Favre's like, I haven't seen enough of him, and Isbitz went nuts on Twitter, and rightly so. It's like it only takes a half an hour. Game Pass on NFL.com, you can watch games in a half an hour. Yeah, I mean, I don't understand when people freak out. Who's Charlie Weiss? Charlie Weiss works on a radio station. And name me a radio host who does a good job that doesn't offer opinions.
Lee, I'm going to say...
What's he supposed to read, a box score? Come
Lee,
on.
Let's think about Winston and pull back for a second.
There is a reason why Weiss can't get a job in the NFL. I'm going to spill some beans here. You like that when I spill beans.
Unnamed source involved?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's a gentleman I know who used to be a news reporter, TV news reporter, and recently he left the business to be a flack, a political flack, a spokesperson. Well, there's some connections going on, and Charlie Weiss has a connection with this guy. And this guy called me up. He goes, hey, Charlie, will you do a story on Charlie Weiss for me? Charlie's wanting this Bucks job. There was a Bucks opening at the time. Charlie's wanting to get back in the NFL, and he wants this Bucks job. And maybe if you do a story on Charlie, we know the Bucks will read it, and maybe that will get a foot in the door for an interview. So Charlie wants to work in the NFL, but he can't get a job in the NFL. Now, I don't know that if he has certain parameters that unless you are – it's a head coaching job and it's only in the South that he will turn down anything else.
I wonder what his reputation is in NFL circles.
I can't say what I want to say, but I know someone's got a connection with him that's not – they said – If you only knew, that was one of those conversations.
Oh, okay.
If you only knew,
never good when they start.
Yeah,
like that.
And so I won't go any further. I don't want to out the guy.
Look, we're here in Little Tampa, Florida, but I don't think it's an overreaction to say, right now, there's nobody in this league like Jameis Winston, in terms of polarization.
Very much so.
Everybody is weighing in on Winston.
Yes,
I mean nationally.
Yes,
and his contract's up. You got all these things are coming together. And even though the Bucks are eliminated from the playoffs, they're very much relevant in certain ways in the national picture. It's a very remarkable thing.
You know who likes that, don't you?
Glazers?
Yes. Yes.
When any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah,
right?
if you're not making the playoffs, but you're relevant, the Glazers like that.
You know,
because it makes you money.
Winston's got his skeptics, and Winston's got his defenders,
so.
and rightfully so.
Well, rightly so, you know.
And it was all on display on Sunday. It was all there.
Well, you know what? I have had people come up to me and said, that's the ultimate Jameis game.
I think so.
Well, I think it was the Arizona game where he was doing the same stuff, but he also had some spectacular runs.
Now, Lee, he said something at the end where maybe a goal of his is to be top 10 in as a team, fewest interceptions thrown, and fewest times sacked. Did you interpret it like I did?
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know.
It's a nice goal, but he's not getting there.
Yeah, I mean, they're far from, you know, they're number one in interceptions, and they're like number two or three in sacks.
Mm-hmm.
They're far from that.
I know you're not a fan of the offensive line, Ira. You've been saying that for years. You're not a big fan. You like the guys personally, but you're not a fan of the offensive line.
I don't think they live up to the money spent on them. I
think that's a fair comment. Now, what do you think of this? A vocal segment of Bucks fans, more so than Jameis, they think the albatross on this team is Donovan Smith. Well, I think we got a little picture of what life is like without Donovan Smith.
And it didn't take very long.
That pass rush to the Colts became a jailbreak. I mean, it was those five plays. It was horrible. Your thoughts on Donovan Smith? Is he maligned?
I don't think he's bad. I don't think he's elite. I think he's, maybe the 10th or 12th best left tackle in football. His durability is a huge plus.
Yes.
It's not a minor thing. It's a huge plus at that position. You lose your left tackle for a sustained period of time, you're crippled. You're just crippled. And the Bucks don't exactly have a swing tackle in reserve that they can throw in there and feel good about. What are you going to do? Move Dotson to the left side? You're going to put Earl Watford over there? Lidke went down, right? You know, he might have been an option. Lee, you like to use this line, and I think I can use it for Donovan Smith. When you rank all the issues concerning the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he ain't in the top 10. He's probably not in the top 10.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
You know, so that's the way you look at it. Now, Would you give him that contract? Well, it goes back to another thing you love saying. Who are you going to get that's better? You use that with Winston. I think that's fair. You're not going to get a left tackle in free agency, Lee.
No, not in free agency. No way. You have the draft one. Now, there was a member of the Bucs media who put this out on Twitter. I could be dead wrong, but I took it as he was astonished and he thought it was cool that at one point the Bucs had three offensive linemen on the field from James Madison.
That is one of those quirky, crazy things.
It is, but you know what? I think that's a damning indictment.
It's nothing to be proud of, I don't think.
Yeah, it's nothing against the wonderful Higher Institute of Learning known as James Madison. But if you have three guys on the field from a dinky football program like James Madison, yeah, it's a great 1AA program. I get it. But come on.
It's like having two guys from Brooklyn College. You can't do it, Lee. You just can't do it.
All right, Lee, what does that tell you about the offensive line and the structure of this offensive line?
You know, and how many times do I have to say? They've had incredible luck keeping those guys intact.
Oh, my gosh. And now, by the way, Ira, I know in the offseason the Bucs made a big push to go to sports science. I guess the previous administration thought that was nonsense.
Well, based on what I see this year, it was a hell of a move.
Because they're healthy.
They've been healthy for
all over the place.
Until I opened my big trap last week. And people are killing me. Javier, shut up, Ira. And there goes Mike Evans down and Winston's
Well, look at the defense.
Everybody's available.
They're all available. I'm not suggesting the defense.
Except Justin Evans, you know, from the beginning.
He's
a whole nother podcast.
No kidding. Granted, Evans got hurt. Granted, Jameis got dinged up. But that defense, there's no way you can compare it even close. It's a sacrilege to suggest they're anything like...
Oh, nice word.
Anything like the old Bucks, but they're better. And you know what? I'll give this guy credit again. I'll mention his name because he pointed it out, and I wrote a story about it, that Football Outsiders, you know, it's a think tank, football thing, and I look at them a lot higher.
Is that the book you got before the season started?
Yeah, one of the All-Macs.
Took you about 4 weeks to get through it?
Yeah. And, you know, they said the Bucks defense is going to get better because... they're going to be healthier. They almost set a record for injuries in the defense. And these guys said, you know, everybody's going to credit Todd Bowles because the defense is better. They're going to get better because they're healthier.
You know, one thing about that, Lee, is...
And that was back in August.
I do my weekly show with Derek Brooks, Identity Tampa 2. During the 3-7 and all the foibles. Of the defense, and it was ranked 31st or whatever. You know, Brooks kept saying, he kept going back to his own rookie season in 95. Sam Weiss last year, before Dungy came in, and the Glazers had just bought the team, and here comes, you know, Sapp and Brooks. And they weren't winning, you know, under Weiss. And he was making rookie mistakes. Even the great Derek Brooks, you know, hadn't learned his craft yet at the pro level. And he kept looking at Dean and Bunting and Davis and Whitehead, and he kept saying every week, you know, they're going through the trials and tribulations that you have to do. You have to do it. I mean, how many rookies are studs right off the bat? Not very many.
Could you also say Devin White?
And you can say Devin White. And he didn't think White was particularly healthy the first 2 weeks he came back from the injury, which is, I think, a fair point.
He wanted to get on the field.
See, that's right. They needed him on the field. And so I said to Brooks a couple of times, I said, how do you know that you got to... What's justifying the faith in Dean and Davis and Bunting that these guys are the guys going forward? I mean, how do you know whether maybe the guy's just not that good? And I don't know. He looks for certain things, and he kind of found some things in there that he could grasp onto, and he had faith that you got to go through this stuff.
And he has a trained eye.
And Lee, let's be honest. I mean, the second half, some of these guys have developed. They have developed.
I think Carlton Davis is a serviceable cornerback. Now, he's handsy, so he's always going to get a flag. But he makes some plays. He gives up some, but I think he's serviceable.
Whitehead's up and down. Whitehead's up and down. He should never have gotten beat near the end of the half on that 50-yarder. That you can't do that.
Yeah, Whitehead, I think, is an excellent run.
He'll pop you. He will pop you.
Yes. I scolded the Bucs coaches. The first touchdown that the Colts scored after a Jameis pick.
That was a miscommunication.
But on that play, why and how in the world someone actually had the bright idea, someone getting paid in the ballpark of $1 million a year, had the revelation that Whitehead, we could run him on a blitz up the three hole, which is patrolled by Quentin Nelson. I mean, come on.
And as a result, your secondary was exposed. I thought there was a miscommunication between Adams and Carlton Davis.
Oh, because Carlton Davis said with his palms in the
Carlton
air.
Yeah, Carlton Davis with his palms in the air.
It means something. Who was screwed up?
I think, you know, Adams thought Davis was going to pick that guy up, and it was a Marcus Johnson, I guess.
Didn't he let the guy go?
But Whitehead got beat at the end of that first half, and that should not happen. Because the Bucs scored with, like, 35 seconds left in the half.
Yeah.
You figure they're going in with a huge momentum thing.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, somebody said they went to the bathroom. They came out on Dr. Wink. Dr. Wink went to the bathroom when the Bucs scored, and he came out, and then the Colts were on the Bucs' 20-yard line. He goes, well, what happened? I took a whiz. It took me 6 seconds. What happened?
And just so people who know who Dr. Wink is, good Dr. Wink is Dr. David Wink,
Florida an Cancer oncologist. Center. Florida Cancer Center. There you go. Fabulous. What do we know about the Lions, Lee? Do we know anything except to know that you know that I'm going to pick the Lions in this game? I got to bow down to Buck Nation.
Yes.
I got to bow down.
Because every time you pick against the Bucks, they win.
But it's killing me in the standings. Javier keeps throwing it out.
Yeah, there's no money involved, right?
There's no money involved.
No big deal. If it's no money, it's no problem.
That's what I feel about the fantasy, you know, Todd Wright's fantasy. No money involved.
No problem.
You know, it's embarrassing not to make the playoffs, but no problem.
Well, I cannot sit here and say I've studied tape of the Lions.
I don't think they do anything particularly well, Lee.
No, they don't. Which doesn't say a lot about Matt Patricia.
I mean, the Bucs stopped the run very well.
Well, you know
what? The Bucs throw the football and with prolific numbers. The Bucs do some things very well.
Both to and against their own team.
Both to and against. But the run defense is very solid.
By the way, Eddie Encina, and I'm not knocking him whatsoever. This is the question I asked Matt Patricia, and I saw Eddie Encina wince when I asked the question. So, and there was a slight pregnant pause. I like that phrase. Pregnant pause by Matt Patricia when I asked this. I said, hey, Jameis is dangerous. That's good and bad. I mean that. That's both good and bad. He's dangerous. He's dangerous for the team he faces. He's dangerous for the team
he plays for. Did he wade in with an answer?
Well, I asked him. I said, is it just a matter of time? You're a defensive guy. When you're developing a game plan for Jameis Winston, is it just a matter of time that he's going to make a mistake and you just have to capitalize on that? Well, he gave me, again, pregnant pause, and he gave me a politically correct answer.
Lee, when the Bucs played the Saints over the years, I haven't heard Arian say it. Cutter would say it. Lovey would say it. Maybe even Raheem Morris. You're going to have some opportunities to make some plays against Drew Brees. You talk about a first ballot Hall of Famer. Because he tried to get into tight windows. And he was good enough to do it, where a lot of guys can't. You know, to say that you're going to have some opportunities against Jameis Winston, I don't think that's a big knock on Winston. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Patricia could have got away with that without a blaring headline.
Coaches
don't want to make a headline.
No, they don't. That's both good and bad about the Bucs. You start, the Bucs are relevant. Why? Jameis throwing picks. It's not that, Jameis is making headlines because it's not many, but some. I know guys on the NFL Network are like, and Jameis is lighting things up. In a good way, they're saying that. You know, every time he steps on the field, it's almost guaranteed 300 yards, which he's done. Then he had 450 last week.
I care more about the 30 points, Lee, and so
yes,
do you.
Yes, yes,
so do you.
And we should all care more about that. Our nondescript. There's a perfect word. There's the word I was looking for the Lions. They're nondescript.
Nondescript.
And that's bad, both for a coach and for the fans.
They're not a relevant football team. And if I'm the owner, I want a relevant football team. Mm-hmm. By the way, Jerry Jones, I got a message for him. Shut up. You know, I can't imagine what it's like covering the Cowboys, Lee. You got to always be around Jerry Jones. I mean, you can't miss him when he says something. You can't miss it.
It depends.
We got the opposite here with the Glazers, and I'm okay with that.
Well,
I'd like somewhere in the middle, you know.
If I'm a publisher and editor, I want that because you're always relevant.
What if you're a beat writer?
No, of course you don't want that. But you know what? The state of journalism that is as it is, if you're a beat writer and you're like, hey, pal, you can either cover Jerry Jones or you can go work at Publix. What do you want to do?
Yeah. And there are always going to be a lot of interest in that football team.
Because
always.
They're America's team.
Now, speaking of interest, everybody's into our picks over here at the Kemper. I don't know. What's your record, Lee? I'm like 3-10.
I don't know and I don't care.
Yeah, good answer.
I just want the Bucks to win. Right. I just want them to have more points than the other team.
You go first this week, Lee. You go
all
first.
All right.
What do you got?
The Bucks are going to go up in the, I almost said the Silver Dome. I'm dating myself there. Ford Field. They're going to go up to Ford Field, and they're going to lay an egg. They're going to hurt. Yes.
Whoa.
They're going to lay an egg. They're going to miss Mike Evans. Matt Patricia, he's a good X's and O's guy. I don't know if he's a good head coach, but he's a good X's and O's guy, good defensive guy, and he's going to find a way to make the Bucks quiver without having Mike Evans. He's going to pick off Jameis four times. and he will win. And mind you, I'm saying this because, like you, every time I pick the Bucks to win, they lose. So I'm being a Clemenza here. Not Clemenza. I'm being, what's his face? The Seinfeld character.
Oh.
George Costanza.
Oh, you're being George Costanza. You're doing the opposite.
Yeah. I'm picking the Lions to win because I want the Bucks to
well,
win.
Well, Lee, I know why you're doing it, Costanza, because when he did the opposite, he picked up that girl at the luncheonette, and you're thinking about that.
That doesn't even work for me.
That doesn't work for you. I think he walked up to her. She was a good looker, and she turned around, and he goes, I don't have a job, and I live with my parents. And she goes, hi, I'm Victoria. I mean, it was a classic scene. All right. Now you took the wind out of my sails because I'm about to take the Lions. I can just hear Buck people say, what are you crazy? They're 3-9-1. The Bucks have a chance to be 500. When's the last time? I'm going 27-20 Lions. I'm not saying Winston's getting picked four times, but I'm saying the Bucks lose the turnover battle, which they are in the habit of losing. They're minus 10, and that's something they got to really address, Lee. They don't get enough takeaways, and, of course, they commit too many giveaways. So 27-20. We're hoping Rock Riley and Isbitz helps us out over here for Buck Nation. But you and I both think the home team's going to come away with a victory.
Ulterior motives.
Speaking of the Motor City, Lee, I'll leave you with this. One of the first Super Bowls I ever covered was the one in Pontiac, Michigan.
Uh-huh.
Silver Dome. I believe it was the 49ers and Bengals.
Yes. 49ers had that legendary goal line
that
stand.
Was the 81 season. It was the famous Dwight Clark catch season.
After that, yeah.
Yeah, it was the 49er first Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
The game was in Pontiac at the Silverdome. Paul Zimmerman, you know, I used to go all week with United Press. I mean, we had 8-10 guys over there, you know, covering the waterfront. The whole week we'd stay there. And, you know, we stayed in Pontiac or whatever, fairly close to the stadium.
That's a suburb, right?
Yeah, a suburb. That's right. And north suburb. Mm-hmm. And I remember by Tuesday, and most guys got in like Sunday, you know, a week before the game. This is Tuesday, media day. I only spent two nights in Michigan at this point. Mm-hmm. And Paul Zimmerman wrote this big thing for Sports Illustrated. This is a horrible city. You got to be kidding me. You put a Super Bowl in Michigan? Are you crazy? The food stinks. The weather stinks. He went crazy. Meanwhile, he's in a suite. You know, he's flying first class. He's covering a Super Bowl. You know how many millions of people would trade places with Paul Zimmerman in 2 seconds? So you got to keep that in perspective. It was not a great game, but it was a close game.
Yeah.
Because the Bengals made it close at the end.
I seem to recall the Bengals made a lot of mistakes early.
There was, I think, a famous goal line stand.
Yes.
By the 49ers.
Yeah. What was the guy's name that he made a tackle? Alexander was the running back.
Alexander
was it Paul Alexander? I can't remember. But Alexander was the running back. And an open field tackle on the 1 yard line.
Didn't they have Icky Woods? They might have had Icky Woods at that time. I can't remember.
I think so, and he did nothing in that game.
Yeah. And Dan Buns?
Icky Woods.
Was it Dan Buns who made the tackle?
Yes, Dan Buns was the open field
tackle. The only time you ever heard Dan Buns' name, ever.
Icky Woods was the running back when they played in Miami.
Oh, you're right.
Alexander was the running back.
That was later in the 80s.
Yeah, Alexander.
Charles Alexander?
Charles Alexander, if I recall correctly, was a first-round pick. And if I even recall more correctly, it was the same draft that the Cardinals drafted O.J. Anderson.
They had Chris Collinsworth.
Yes.
They did. And Ken Anderson, I believe, was the quarterback.
Ken Anderson was the quarterback. There starts with a V, I want to say. The other wide receiver who was a first-round pick or a second-round pick.
And they had Anthony Munoz.
Collinsworth was a second-round pick. And Munoz was on that team.
Munoz was on that team.
I want to say the guy's name started with a V. I can't recall. But he was a first-round pick. But Collinsworth was a better receiver. Collinsworth stuck around. His other guy didn't stick around. He was okay. He was a starter. He was a first-round pick.
That was the beginning of the great Walsh-Montana dynasty. We didn't know it was going to be a dynasty at the time.
Ronnie Lott.
But that was the first
Ronnie Lott was a rookie, correct?
I think they had three out of the four defensive backs were rookies.
Carlton Williamson, Eric Wright, Ronnie Lott. Their secondary was so terrible that, if I recall correctly, Walsh not only did he load up.
He blanketed the draft. That's right.
It was the first three picks, I want to say.
I think you might be
obviously
right.
Obviously, Ronnie Lott was a first-round pick. Eric Wright, I want to say, was a second-round pick. Williamson may have been a fourth-round pick, but they all started.
And you know what? I'll leave it with this. Williamson, I believe, is the guy at the end of the great NFC title game against the Cowboys in Candlestick, the Dwight Clark catch game. You know, after Clark made that catch with 50 seconds left, Dallas got the ball back.
To midfield.
And Danny White fired a slant. And I think it might have been Drew Pearson.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked like he was going to go 80 yards, And Williamson tripped him up at like the 40. And on the next play, there was a fumble, uh-huh. And the game was over.
Wasn't Pearson tackled by his, or didn't Williamson grab him by the jersey, and then he pulled him back?
I don't know if it was the jersey or the ankle or whatever, but it was a one-handed tackle.
Yeah, it might have been a horse collar. Might have been a horse collar, but it was like, it was touch and go. A couple inches either way, he's gone.
Can you imagine an 80-yarder after the Dwight Clark catch? Anyway, we'll be back this podcast strong. See you next week, Lee.